Justice Resnick has recused herself in all the cases we hear this morning. We're pleased to have sitting in place of Justice Resnick, Judge Cheryl Wade, on the first two cases. Judge Cheryl Wade, who is a judge of the Court of Appeal, of the Court of Appeals in the 7th Appellate District. Welcome, Judge Wade.
Thank you.
The first case is 05-1638, Strongsville Board of Education and City of Strongsville versus the Cuyahoga County Board of Revision. Mr. Conzer. Mr. Conzer, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Chief Justice. I am, may it please the Court, Thomas A. Conzer, co-counsel for the City of Strongsville and the Strongsville Board of Education. This case is here before the Court on an appeal from the Board of Tax Appeals in a decision which set the taxable value for a parcel of real property in the City of Strongsville for the 2000 and the 2001 tax year. It is the position of the City of Strongsville and the Board of Education that the Board of Tax Appeals erred in setting the value by refusing to recognize the value set in a recent sale of the property. The property was sold in 2001. The sale contract was entered into in May of 2001 and the title transferred in August of 2001. The property was sold from the Series Group to Royalton Investors LLC and Big T Investment LLC for $16 million. Concurrent with that sale, then the Series Group leased back of the building from the purchasers. The BTA refused to recognize the sale as the value of the property and instead began a search of appraisal evidence and other evidence to find a value for the property, contrary to this court's decision in the Berea case. We submit again that since the Board of Tax Appeals refused to accept the sale value as the indicator of value, it erred. This court just last year in the Berea case said that if there's a recent arm's length sale between a willing buyer and a willing seller, the value of that sale should set the value of the property for real estate tax purposes. This is what occurred in this case. The buyer and the seller were independent parties, unrelated to each other. They entered into a sales transaction for this property. They agreed to a sales price of $16 million. They had an appraisal done of the property. The sale would not go through if the appraisal did not justify that sale price. It was an arm's length transaction. It was voluntary on both parties. The seller was motivated to sell because of a desire to rid of itself of the building and the liability of the mortgage and to increase its capital for insurance purposes. There was no compulsion of duress. The property was placed on the open market. The seller began advertising and seeking bids on the property in December of 2000. The seller hired Grubb and Ellis to seek out potential purchasers for the property.
The BTA decided this case before Berea.
That is correct,
Your Honor. So it did not have Berea. It decided it on what was the case law at the time. Would you argue that, let's back it up, did they incorrectly apply the case law that existed up to that point in time when they decided the case?
Well, Your Honor, I think depending on how you view the Ratner cases, you could argue that they could look into economic rents and values, but I believe
they could consider appraisals.
Yes.
And there were appraisals in this case.
Yes, there was, Your Honor.
And did you have an appraisal?
Yes, we did, Your Honor.
And what was the value in that appraisal?
He arrived at a $16 million value on his appraisal.
The same exact figure as it sold for.
I believe it was the same exact figure, Your Honor.
Miraculous. What was the property owner's appraisal, or was there more than one? Was there more than one appraisal for the property owner, or just
the property owner submitted an appraisal at the BTA that valued it at a $9 million value, the value accepted by the BTA. There was also an appraisal done in conjunction with the sale. And the sales contract provided that if this independent appraisal did not value the property at least $15.7 million, well, the buyer could walk away from the deal.
The property owner argues that this was a financing arrangement. It was a way to raise capital and cloaked in a real estate transaction, but what they were really doing was raising cash. And that was the whole purpose of the transaction.
Well, Your Honor, they were raising cash, but it was through a sale transaction.
And the BTA agreed with them.
Well, their purpose in the sale was twofold, to sell the building and to raise capital. The outside director, Mr. Cavateo, testified that one of the purposes of the sale was to remove liabilities from their balance sheet. So their balance sheet would be in better position for insurance regulatory purposes and to allow them to sell additional insurance. If this was truly a financing deal, they weren't removing any liabilities from their balance sheet. The only way they could remove the mortgage liability from their balance sheet and not replace it with another liability was through a sale. And this is what they wanted to do. They wanted to sell the property. Now, it is possible that in some circumstances, what is called, quote unquote, a sale leaseback can be a financing transaction. In those situations, however, unlike in this situation, at the end of the lease, either the building has reached the end of its economic life, so there's nothing there, and the so-called buyer has bought nothing, he has just got his loan repaid, or the property can be repurchased by the seller for a nominal amount or a bargain price. Again, that verifies the fact that what you're really dealing with is a financing situation here. The seller's getting money. Well, at the end, he's going to have the
building.
Let
me ask you an appraisal question. What did your appraiser find to be the market rents in the neighborhood?
I believe they were around $13. I don't recall the exact figure.
And what was the rent under this lease?
I don't recall that right now, Your Honor. I could check that out and
well, that would be a pretty good indication of whether or not there was just an arm's length transaction or whether there was something else going on.
I believe our appraiser did conclude that the actual rents were consistent with the market in the case. I don't recall the exact dollar figures on it.
Okay, now in this case, I believe the building was resold.
Yes, it was.
At a later point in time. For even more money.
I believe it was $23 million.
Right. And that would all be driven by the strength of the lease.
Well, Your Honor, I don't believe so. It would be in part driven by the lease, but you have to look at the ability of the lease, the lessee to pay that lease stream. I mean, whenever you're buying a building and there are leases on it, certainly the buyer looks at that. But the BTA itself found in its findings that the sale price was not was determined independent of the amount of the lease that the Sirius Group was willing to pay, and the sale contract itself provided for adjustments in the lease based on what the value of the building was in light of the appraisal that was performed. In fact, if the appraisal in conjunction with the sale came back below $14.5 million, Ceres could walk away from the deal. They didn't have to sell the building. So clearly, they were looking to sell this building, and they wanted to sell it for at least $14.5 million, or they weren't going to go forward with the deal. Likewise, the buyers who were willing to pay $16 million wanted to make sure that building was at least worth $15.7 million, or they weren't going to go forward with the deal. These were two independent people who arrived at a sales price. Then they arrived at a lease price.
You don't think the lease, the terms of the lease, determine the value of the building, a commercial building?
No, I think the value of the building was set, and based on the value of the building, as in any case, when you seek to rent a building, if it's a more valuable building, you're going to pay more rent. If it's a less valuable building, you're going to pay less rent. And that's what they specifically provided for in their sales agreement. If an independent appraiser determined that this building wasn't worth $16 million, we'll lower the rent because it's not as valuable of a building.
Well, they were appraising a building with a long-term lease, were they not?
They were not appraising the leasehold.
They weren't?
Yeah. They were appraising this building, and they were trying to arrive at the fair market value of it to justify the sale price. Now, in part, that's one of the issues that we had in the BTA. They refused to let us introduce that appraisal because they said it wasn't an appraisal of the tax lien date. But that wasn't the purpose for the introduction of the appraisal. The purpose for the introduction of the appraisal was to justify and support the sale price, to show that this was truly a sale. And this transaction had all of the characteristics of a true sale.
Counsel, before we get to that, I think Justice Pfeiffer asked you initially what the appraisal was for this building in the eyes of Strongsville. And I think originally, wasn't it $9.5 million?
There was, I believe in the Board of Revision, there was an earlier appraisal.
For 9.5, and then it was adjusted, and that's when there was a valuation of 8.3, so there was a discrepancy there, and then it initiated the complaint, and then it jumped to 16 with the sale of the property.
The initial report that was submitted in the Board of Revision was a summary valuation analysis. It was not a full appraisal done by the appraiser. So that could justify the differences in values there. It's not, that submitted is kind of a quick analysis that is done. It's not a full appraisal with a full research of comparables, and I believe it just looked at some comparables, didn't do a cost approach or an income approach.
Used when filing the initial complaint in 2000 or 2001 for the tax year 2000?
That would be for the 2000, yes. In this particular case, and if I may step back, Your Honor, Mr. Chief Justice, I omitted to ask for some rebuttal time. Could I reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal?
Hey, watch your time there.
Mr. Kunzer, may I just ask you a question?
Sure.
You had indicated that this is an arm's length transaction.
Yes.
There is a statement that's contained that Mr. Vanney, the school district's appraiser, reported and testified he did not consider the sale leaseback to be an arm's length transaction. Could you explain that to me?
Yes. Your Honor, if you look at his entire testimony, what he was saying is when you look at a sale that involves a lease back, you don't necessarily accept that as true value of the building initially. You need to look into it to see if there was any ties between the parties or if it was truly an arm's length transaction. He subsequently concluded, after again looking at the market and finding that the rentals in the lease were consistent with the market and that the sale price was consistent with the market, that this in fact was an arm's length transaction and did reflect true value. In fact, the property owner's director himself testified that it was an arm's length transaction. It page 28 of the transcript in the Supreme Court supplement, page 10, Mr. Cavateo says, "Well, I know that the lease payments were going to be expense payments for us and that it was not going to be a consolidation. It's a totally arm's length transaction where Ceres sold the building and entered into the lease with no consolidation or relationship between the two other than lessor and lessee. That is basically what my knowledge of it was. There was not going to be any ties going forward or connections." It was an arm's length transaction. It was a sale and it was a lease. They marketed the building. They tried to get the most money they could. They were trying to remove the liability of the mortgage. The only way they could do that would be by selling the building. If they refinanced it, they wouldn't eliminate the liability. They made no effort to refinance the balloon payment that was coming due. They sought a sale. They had four or five offers. They analyzed the different offers and accepted the best offer. They didn't just accept this one. This is not like some of the other sale leaseback cases that this court has had, such as the Kroger case or the Cleveland Heights May Company case, where there was just one person was approached for financing. The buyer recognized it as a sale. He recorded it as a sale for income tax purposes, for insurance regulatory purposes, and now he's arguing that it's not a sale. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Mr. Kunzer. Mr. Sarkar.
Thank you, Your Honors. My name is Richard Sarkar, and I represent all of the taxpayers in this matter. Before I get into the bulk of my argument, I wanted to correct some statements that Mr. Kunzer had incorrectly made. First of all, the appraisals that were done by the taxpayers in this matter for 2000 was $9.5 million, and for 2001 was $9.3 million, not for $9 million. Secondly, I wanted to correct this contention that Saris Group just accepted the best offer. In fact, Saris Group did not accept the best offer. As the BTA found, Saris Group accepted an offer that was actually the second highest offer. The highest offer would have required a due diligence period that would have taken it past the balloon mortgage payment date on the existing mortgage. And as the BTA found, that was one of the compelling reasons to enter into this sale-leaseback transaction, was to generate cash in order to first pay off that ballooning mortgage and also to be able to generate capital to write more insurance business. Those were the two most important factors that the BTA found in compelling this sale. And based upon that, it found that this was not an arm's length transaction because it was done under a form of economic coercion. But specifically, I wanted to talk about how this court has dealt with sale-leaseback transactions over the last 10 years. Over the last 10 years, this court has said that when a sale-leaseback transaction is a financing tool, in that instance, you don't look to the sale price to determine fair market value, because in those instances, the sale price is often distorted by the actual leaseback provisions. That's exactly what happened in this case. Saris Group was looking to raise capital in order to pay off a ballooning mortgage and to generate capital. Yes, Your Honor.
Counsel says that the appraisal showed that the lease value that they were paying was comparable to other lease values in the area. Do you agree with that?
I disagree with that, Your Honor. My appraiser reviewed the comparable leases in that area. And one of the things that the board...
What were the differences that they found?
Well, first of all, when our appraiser was reviewing the properties, he found that the Board of Education's appraiser wasn't really using comparable income and comparable properties to compare this property. I also can't recall the exact differences between what my appraiser felt fair market value was and what the lease payments were, but I do recall that he was very specific that these were very inflated over the rest of the market. And what the BTA determined in weighing these two appraisals and weighing both of their determinations of what market was, they determined that Mr. Van Kuren, the taxpayer's appraisal, was much a better indicator of value because of the properties that he used and the method that he used in calculating the market rents and determining what market was. But that brings me actually to the point of Mr. Vanney, the school district appraiser. He didn't just say on one occasion that this sale-leaseback transaction was at arm's length. He said it three times. He said it first in his appraisal report. In a flat statement, the sale of leaseback is not considered an arm's length transaction. At hearing, I asked him, do you consider this not to be an arm's length transaction? He said, well, that's the first thing that comes out of your head, that this sale leaseback would not be an arm's length transaction. I then went on and just in order to make sure that I had his full opinion, I asked him, so when you went into doing your appraisal process, you didn't presume that this sale price was indicative of value. It just so happened that when you did your appraisal, it worked out that your appraisal matched the fair market value. And he agreed with that fact and essentially said that that's what his appraisal would have shown. So he acknowledged on three separate occasions that this was not an arm's length transaction. So the BTA had ample opportunity and ample authority to determine that they needed to go to appraisal evidence.
Okay, counsel, let's walk through the law a little bit. In between the BTA decision and today, Berea was announced.
Yes, Your Honor.
And am I correct in assuming for you to now get out from under the clutches of Berea, the thing you're just talking about is critical. That is to persuade us that it was not an arm's length transaction and that the BTA so found. That would be critical to get yourself beyond Berea, wouldn't it?
It's important, but I don't know if it's critical, Your Honor, because Berea still allows for the fact that you could have an arm's length transaction, but when you show that the sale price is not indicative of the real value, there still is an exception within Berea that, and I think this is that case. This is what falls into that exception within Berea. Because what we're talking about here is not a case, and let's go back to Berea. Berea was overruling Ratner on the grounds that you couldn't take in the way a property and a purchase was being financed into consideration when you're valuing the property. This is different. This was not a situation where he had below market financing. This is a situation where the entire transaction was a financing transaction. So I believe that this actually fits right underneath Berea. This fits into the situation where the sale price is not indicative of fair market value because this is a sale leaseback transaction and a financing tool. And it goes right back into this court's analysis in, and I always mispronounce this thing, I believe Pingay, where it said that the sale leaseback price may distort a sale price because of the mechanisms within it.
Okay, and if we're to look beyond Berea or agree that this is outside of it, then do we have to analyze the appraisals or do we rely on the BTA's analysis of, because then you're to appraisals, aren't you? If the sale price is out, then it's the case is decided on appraisal testimony.
Absolutely, Your Honor. Then this court must take the role that it has typically taken with regards to the BTA cases, and it is determined that it's not going to be acting as a super BTA. It won't be reviewing all the weighing of the evidence because that is the role of the BTA. This court has found that over and over again, most recently in the Hardy case, where it will not sit as a super BTA. It will defer to those decisions absent an abuse of discretion.
Why should we not remand the case to the BTA to apply Berea?
Your Honor, you could, but I believe that we'd come right back to where we are. We would come back to this case, and I believe that under Berea, this case still would, the finding of this case would not change. This was an instance where the sale price was not indicative of fair market value, and I believe that you would go back to the appraisal evidence, the appraisers would, that evidence would come in, because we did have significant evidence rebutting that presumption. We had evidence from the Mr. Cavateo, the director, who said this was being done because of a ballooning mortgage payment, and this was being done in order to raise capital. There's also evidence from both appraisers that this was not an arm's length transaction. So we've rebutted that sale price presumption. And then the BTA would have to turn to appraisal evidence. That's exactly what it did. I don't think this court needs to send it back to the BTA, but I think that if it did, we would be the exact same, we'd have the exact same decision because we still have no sale, arm's length transaction, and we don't have a sale price that's indicative of fair market value.
Did the appraiser for the school board say it was not an arm's length transaction?
Yes, sir, and he said so in his report. In the appellant supplement to the briefs at page 603, he flat out says the sale leaseback agreement is not considered an arm's length sale. And then he buttressed that at hearing and said, when you're looking at the sale leaseback, the first thing out of your head you would say is that this is not an arm's length sale. This actually is the flip side of the Lakota case, Your Honors, where both parties in Lakota determined that an arm's length transaction had occurred, but one party had said that wasn't, you know, that even despite that, this was not a case where you should be looking at that price as fair market value. In this case, both parties agree that no arm's length transaction has occurred. So the BTA had to go to appraisal evidence in order to determine fair market value of this property. It weighed all the evidence as it should have, and it found that the taxpayer's appraisal evidence was more persuasive than the school district's appraisal evidence. And Your Honor, I really have nothing more for my argument unless you have any further questions. But the taxpayers believe that this sale is a sale leaseback transaction and can still be treated as this court has treated sale leaseback transactions in its decisions in the Kroger case, the South Euclid case, and the Cleveland Heights case, where they all found that a sale leaseback transaction, which are financing transactions, those sale prices cannot be indicative of fair market value, and you must turn to appraisal evidence. And in fact, I believe the South Euclid case found that even though that sale leaseback transaction was arm's length, it still was not indicative of fair market value. I don't believe that those holdings are disturbed by Berea. I think that this fits in very nicely into the new construct that we have under Berea, where you look to the arm's length transaction. if there is a true arm's length, I mean, you look to the sale price, if there is a true arm's length sale, and if there's not, or if the sale price is not indicative of fair market value, you must turn to appraisal evidence. Unless your honors have any other questions.
How much is the lease? What's the amount of the lease on a square foot basis?
Your Honor, I don't know that. I believe, though, that it was closer to, for the lease, I believe it was a closer, I'd like to say $30 a square foot, but I don't know exactly. I know that the market, our appraiser determined that the sale, it was probably half of what the lease payments were. And that went a long way into the appraisal's determination.
So for the party on the other side to enter into this, arrangement, they had to assess one other thing, and that is the strength of your client to be around for the duration of the lease.
Absolutely, Your Honor. And the lease had at the end of it a renewal period. And that actually gets to one of the factors that the school district's appraiser used when he was valuing the property. He valued the property. This property is the corporate headquarters for an insurance company. He valued the property like it would be sliced up and split amongst 10 different companies, 10 different lessors. In fact, he did not recognize the fact that because of the long-term nature of the lease, that couldn't be done very easily. Saris Group was entitled to that property throughout the duration of that lease and for an extension period of time. So it really could not have been carved up as the school district's appraiser had said. While we're on that subject, I do want to talk a little bit about the market that this was being put onto. Because the school district's attorney speaks about this property as it had been marketed to the entire world. But in fact, this was only marketed to people that were willing to enter into sale leaseback transactions, that would be willing to enter into this sort of financing transaction. It wasn't really an open market. It was a market of maybe four or five companies that enter into those types of transactions, all with the understanding that they'd be entering into a financing transaction and not a real sale of the property.
Go ahead. Counsel, if you look at the Walters case, Walters versus Knox City Board of Revision, and talking about the arm's length transactions, those characteristics, that it be voluntary, without duress, taking place in an open market, and the parties acting in their own self-interest. If I understand you, it's the two points of duress and then not being in an open market that you would argue makes this not arm's length?
Yes, Your Honor. Okay. And that's what the BTA found, that because of, and it took in evidence under the Lakeside case, under the test that was reaffirmed in the Vlaxos case, and it took in evidence with regards to economic compulsion.
But the BTA never made a finding specifically that this was or was not an arm's length transaction, is that correct?
It found that there was economic coercion, that it was done under economic duress. Okay.
But it did not make the specific finding that we need to look at in light of Berea, which is this arm's length or is it not?
I believe that is correct, that there's no statement from the BTA that said this is not an arm's length transaction. However, it did note that both appraisers agreed that this was not an arm's length transaction.
So you're saying if we sent it back to the BTA, the decision would be the same?
I believe the decision would be the same. I think that they may add that sentence in just to be clear under Berea. But as I had said before, I believe that this case fits in under Berea and doesn't need to go back to the BTA. I don't think that this actually changes the landscape of the law with regards to sale-leaseback transactions. I think that this court's decisions over the past 10 years about how you treat a sale-leaseback transaction are not disturbed by Berea because they fit into that second, the phrase that comes after the or, where the sale price is not indicative of fair market value. If this court had not wanted that provision in there, that little exception, I'm sure that it would not have included it. But this fits into that. This is different than what this court was overruling in Ratner, where it was taking into consideration below market financing. Here, this entire transaction was a financing transaction. It wasn't just the sale of property. It was a sale of property and an income stream.
Although our holding in Berea does not really talk about that exception. Our holding in Berea is that when the property has been the subject of a recent arm's length sale between a willing seller and a willing buyer, the sale price of the property shall be the true value for taxation purposes. I mean, that's the holding, and then we cited the statute.
Yes, Your Honor, but in that opinion, the court also went on to say that appraisal is based upon other factors other than sale price is appropriate for determining value in cases where no arm's length sale has taken place or where it is shown that a sales price is not reflected of value. And I believe that this falls into that second category.
So it will be a determination for us to make as to whether that's part of the holding or not.
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you.
I see that my time has elapsed. I would just briefly conclude by saying I believe that the BTA did not abuse its discretion in its decision on this case, and that the way that this court has been treating sale leaseback transactions for the last 10 years has not been disturbed by Berea, and it actually fits quite nicely into the landscape of the law after Berea has been decided.
Thank you, Mr. Sarkar.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Konzer, you saved 30 seconds of your time.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Konzer, you said earlier that, and maybe I misunderstood you, that the appraisal, sort of the general statement, appraisals were sort of a summary, not a thorough appraisals, but Van Curen's appraisal seems to be, he looked at 8 different transactions, and he has all this, the board is reciting his appraisal, mm-hmm. and he does the rental value by floors in the building, yeah. And is that not a thorough appraisal?
That one is, Your Honor. That was the one submitted to the Board of Tax Appeals. I was referring to the analysis submitted to the Board of Revision below.
Okay, but the Board of Tax Appeals used the comprehensive one in supporting their decision.
Correct, Your Honor.
Yeah, okay.
Your Honor, if I may, the issue of coercion that was brought up by the property owner, actually that goes against the property owner. I don't believe that what was involved here, the need to pay off a mortgage, is sufficient coercion to invalidate a sale. But if the seller is operating under coercion, then they're going to sell the property for less than it's worth. So this property should be worth even more than $16 million, not less. Also, additionally, there is some confusion in the property owner's argument regarding arm's length transaction and a sale. Those two concepts are really two different things. There can be an arm's length financing transaction, there can be an arm's length sale. This clearly was an arm's length transaction. The outside director for the Ceres Group admitted that. The question then becomes, was this a sale or was this a financing transaction? I think the record establishes that it was a sale and therefore the sale price should be used. If this court doesn't believe that the record clearly establishes it, that it's a sale, then it should be remanded back to the Board of Tax Appeals to determine whether this was a sale or a financing transaction, because the Board of Tax Appeals never did that. They took the property owner's contention that the sale price was not indicative of value and then immediately went to appraisals and other evidence. It didn't rule whether this was a sale or not. Thank
Counsel,
you.
Counsel, let me ask you one question for clarification. You were initially asked whether the lease per square foot was consistent with market value, and you said yes. Is that correct?
Her appraiser concluded that. Their appraiser did not.
Right, because I think the conclusion was that it was an above-market lease. Is that correct?
Their appraiser did conclude that, yes.
And obviously, so too did the board.
I don't recall if they made a specific finding that they did.
By inference of the result, you would say you would have to conclude that they accepted that.
Well, I think that you could infer that, but they also at one point specifically made contradictory findings. They said that the purchase on page 6 of their opinion, which is on page 838 of the supplement, the purchase price paid by Royalton Investment LLC and Big T Investment LLC was a direct function of the rent that Ceres Group was willing to guarantee through the lease. Then the next sentence, the sale price was set by offers from possible purchasers independent from any rental amounts. Those two sentences directly conflict. So I think if you're going to, you can't rely on the decision of the Board of Tax Appeals if you're going to look at an analysis of other factors, because it's contradictory.
Thank you, Mr. Conzer.
Thank you.
The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.